Hello and welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. My guest today has been a long time coming. We've been orbiting around each other for years now. His wife, Sylvie Hukassian, was on the podcast a couple years ago. But his name is Brian Reeves. Brian is an author. He's a men's coach. He is a very productive writer. He's a former United States Air Force captain who went walkabout and ended up with dysentery in Egypt and backpacked throughout Australia and ended up working as a watch company executive and slowly found his way into the personal development space. He's written a couple books. The most recent one is called Choose Her Every Day, parentheses, or Leave Her. Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. And we dive into that one. We talk about relationships and love. We talk about the various dead ends that we can face as individuals, including isolation and cynicism, numbing. We talk about our capacity, our range of emotions that we can experience. It's a good conversation. Brian's a fun dude. He's got a great accent. He's got a great voice for podcasting. He's brilliant. He's very experienced. He's eloquent. I really enjoyed this conversation. We had a good time. I think at one point I told him that we could be friends. So it was a very lighthearted but profound discussion. There's a lot in here about relational dynamics. You're definitely going to learn some things. And as usual, I've included links in the show notes for you to get into Brian's space. He's got a great Instagram account. He's written a couple books, etc. He's got his own podcast. So yeah, this is a fun one. You're going to dig it. And I encourage you, well, not encourage, I anticipate that you will enjoy this conversation with Brian Reeves. But what typically happens is I'll be bantering with the guest for a good 5-10 minutes beforehand and think, oh man, that would have been such a good way to start the show.
Yeah, right.
So here you just said we're running off a cliff like hang gliders about to parachute or whatever they do.
Whatever hang gliders do, just hoping the wind catches us as we leap.
Have you ever done that, hang gliding?
I have not. I've skydived many times, you know, jumped out of an airplane, but I've never run off of like the edge of a cliff or a building. Like there's something about that that's different than just jumping out of an airplane. Like I've always wanted to. I probably never will. But no, I have never. Have you?
No, man. No. I have a height thing that I don't love them. But
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I have the same height thing, actually.
How is that jumping out of an airplane with the fear of heights?
You know, the thing about jumping out of an airplane, the scariest part is just the airplane ride up. All of the anticipation. And of course, I mean, you know, the actual leaping out of the window is a moment, or the doorway. But you're so far from the ground, it's almost like the ground is kind of abstract. So it's you know, I can't really connect with the ground in a very visceral way. Whereas, you know, so Sylvie and I, my wife, who's now my wife, we got engaged at the Cliffs of Moher in Ireland. You know about the cliff?
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, so 700, you know, sheer drop right into the ocean, and there's no fences there. You know, you saw people sitting on the edge.
I did not. My recollection was that it was so foggy we could not see the ocean.
I thought maybe you blacked out.
I mean, I likely would have. Yeah, I've had that same experience at the Grand Canyon, where you look down and your eyes and your brain can't seem to reconcile what you're experiencing.
Right.
And then you inevitably see a bunch of tourists leaning over taking selfies at the edge of a precipice that makes my palms sweaty.
Dude, I know mine are starting to sweat just thinking about it. And Sylvie, she doesn't have that. So she was walking, and it was a clear and sunny day, so we could see everything. And man, I was like, in my brain, 50-50 chance I'm going to watch someone die today. And, you know, I would, like, Sylvie would walk kind of close to the edge and be like, woman, She's like, I'm not watching, you know, that kind of thing. We got, I actually asked her to marry me, but far away from the edge, you know, after we walked that day. But I'm terrified, man. That makes my skin crawl. And but I think that's partly why, Jeremy, also I want to run off with a parachute, you know, confront that, you know, I've done rappelling down cliffs like that, and also terrifying. I don't know, but there's, I don't know what that's that sick part of me that wants to, you know, leap into the abyss of death and survive it, of course.
Yeah. I'm reminded of something we should probably introduce you for those listening that are like, who's this guy?
Who's afraid of heights?
Ryan Reeves is a world famous paraglider from Ireland. No. But so how do you introduce yourself? Like, who are you? What's your deal?
What is my deal? Well, I mean, just the short byline is I am an author. I write books on relationships to other, relationship to self. I'm focused on men's coaching, but I've been doing couples coaching for the last 10, 11 years, working with couples, relationship coaching. But yeah, now I really focus on helping men overcome the challenges that I think are in many ways unique to men, both in just life in general, but often with a focus on intimate relationship.
So you're suggesting that men have issues despite the patriarchy, Ryan. I was told that we are all doing sweet and swell, very healthy and embodied.
Well, that's the great trick, I think, of the patriarchy way of thinking, is it doesn't just suppress women. It suppresses men too. It teaches men to be afraid of other men. It teaches men to not trust men. It teaches men that it's not safe to feel, not safe to be our authentic selves. So yeah, we're not doing any. Well, look, and I do believe that we have a certain privilege and there are certain things that I don't have to experience, generally speaking, that my wife constantly experiences to her detriment, particularly around like safety and even money making, things like this. But all the same, man, you know, as a white man on top of it, like, yeah, man, life is still fucking hard. It's still, there are a lot of places where I can go and not really feel like I'm allowed to be who I authentically am or even explore that. So yeah, I think men are suffering as well, 100%, of course.
Yeah. And when you were talking about your desire to run off a cliff and confront death, I was looking through your Instagram earlier and you wrote something about how men pursue big feelings only through the exercise of big adventure or big moments or something like that. Can you, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Well, I think because so many of us men are disconnected from our bodies, disconnected from our emotions, our feelings, one of the ways that we feel alive, you know, there's this word that in my work with men I use a lot. It's enlivenment. I mean, we want to feel enlivened. Even Joseph Campbell said this beautifully. He said, I don't think that people, and you know, we're talking about men in this case, but he said, I don't think that people are really looking for the meaning to life so much as they are looking for the feeling, the experience of being alive. And I think a lot of men in particular, now I'm former military, I was 10 years in the Air Force. But I think also just it's the message that certainly, you know, our generation got growing up, you know, feelings are not cool. You know, crying isn't cool. Being sensitive is like, you may as well just be a girl, which is the biggest insult you could say to another boy, right? Mm-hmm. So I think being so disconnected from my body, from what I'm feeling, from what's really going on inside my skin, I you know, can't feel anything. And when I can't feel anything, well, what are the things that I can do to help me feel something? Well, pornography, you know, alcohol creates some kind of feeling, you know, warm fuzzies, you know, I love you, man. You know, a lot of men get into the, I love you, man, when we drink alcohol together, or do some kind of drugs. Extreme sports, sex, you know, we will use sex, I think, to have big feelings as well. And So, yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think about that?
I really resonated with that post that you did about, I think you said the five W's, something, or the six W's. You talk about men essentially, I think I wrote them down, that men can essentially talk about or have a capacity to discuss work, war, and war was in the context of sports. Work, war, women, Washington, so politics and weather.
Yeah.
And it seems like that relates to what you discussed there, of the like the I love you man culture, which is like, hey, have you, how did your favorite team of millionaires throw the ball this weekend? And like, did you notice the fireball in the sky was particularly intense? And gosh, politics. And there's this kind of superficial veneer that is societally accepted and promoted.
Yeah.
But then there's this like underlying tissue which makes us human, which I think for a lot of men in particular is like a language that they've never been exposed to. And there's a lot of discomfort, shame, fear, self-judgment, etc.
I look like sports. I love sports. I'm an athlete. I'm competitive. I enjoy that. And I notice, you know, watching a sports game, it's amazing. It's like the one place, the sports field in the surrounding stadium, and maybe you know, sitting on the couch watching the TV set, it's the one place we get to have big feelings pretty consistently, right? Big, we get to celebrate. I mean, we explode in joy and jubilation, you know, when our team just puts a ball in a net. That's it. That's all that's happening. You know, they're solving a made up problem, putting a ball in a net past some other dudes that are trying to stop them. And I mean, it's the height of ecstasy when it happens, and the height of despair when it doesn't.
Totally. Like it seems like one of the few places where it's okay to be sad and express despair and tears, right? I've never considered it to be sort of a safe place for male expression in that way, but it does make a lot of sense when you pause and consider it.
It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing.
But I'm the same, man. It's like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of us that are longing for that deeper connection, and we're trying to access that connection through superficial means of whether, you know, war Washington kind of discourse. Right. Yeah. What do you see in the work that you do with men? Is there like a uniform suite of issues that you can just, you know, you're like, oh, this guy's doing that, that guy's doing that, that guy's doing that?
Something I call I guess I like the number five, the five dead ends that sabotage men. I don't know why, number five. 3, 5, 7, odd numbers is what they tell you in marketing school. You know, just go with odd numbers. I don't know, maybe that's why. Anyway, five. I'm sure I could come up with six, but five's a better number.
No, there's most definitely only five.
Yeah, only definitely. There's not more than five of what I'm about to share with you. Cynicism is one, right? Men, we engage in a lot of cynicism, a lot of bah humbug. The world sucks. The president sucks. Democrats suck. Or Republicans suck. Something sucks. Or I suck. You know, I suck at this. I can't do this. You know, blah blah blah. You know, we get caught in kind of cynical ways of being, you know, bitches, man, stuff like that, right? Just cynical way of viewing the world and ourselves. And that's something that is so common amongst men. Another one is we isolate. We lone wolf our way through life. We don't ask for support. This is what we were talking about earlier. Like men don't, it's common knowledge that women don't really trust men. Whether or not men think they have good reason to is irrelevant. Like we kind of say, okay, yeah, women often don't trust men. Well, what we don't really talk about is also men don't often trust men. You know, I think, you know, you and me, Jeremy, because we have been doing the kind of work we've been doing for some time, like we're really fortunate to have beautiful, trustable friendships with trustable men, you know, thoughtful, trustable men. The vast majority of men don't have that. You know, I mean, I work with so many guys that are even with their own brothers, their siblings, they don't have trustable relationships with their siblings, with their fathers, you know, hell, even with their sons often. They can't have certain conversations. So there's so much isolating that we men do. And I have been just as guilty of that as anybody. You know, it's easy for me to isolate. And it's something that I have to really guard against because I'll do it. You know, not reach out, carry my burdens by myself, et cetera.
I relate to that. I mean, literally last night, my girlfriend said to me, you know, I'm not a mind reader. And I had that moment of like, oh man, I've been doing that thing again, haven't I? So it seems like these, I mean, we've heard two of the five dead ends, but it seems like there's like a old way or a pattern or a dynamic of doing something. And then you kind of do the work, do some growing, get to another level. But it seems like in getting to that level, the stairs are like a ramp made of grease and slime. It's quite easy to just, if you pause and even rest for a moment,
it's true,
right back down where you are.
Yeah. All those same forces, pressures, programs, old stories, patterns are waiting there to reassert themselves, right? Cynicism. Oh man, I can get cynical real fast when I'm not vigilant. And sometimes I'm not, and cynicism will just show up in the way that it does. Same isolation, right? I said, I can still isolate if I'm not careful. I have to force myself sometimes to reach out to friends, you know, for support, whatever. So, the third one, and these are not in this order. They're just the order that I'm sharing them. But the third, what I call being disoriented, feeling disoriented, being disoriented. And what I mean by that is like we're giving ourselves to pursuits that don't really matter to us, right? We're oriented around things. Another way of saying disoriented is we are oriented towards things that don't matter. I mean, money. I'm not against money. I love money. Money's not the thing, but so many men make their entire existence about making more money for the sake of having it, right? And are oriented around that, or chasing women, right? Oriented towards chasing women. And again, I love women. I married one of them. So I'm not anti-women. But when we use women, we're oriented towards getting women to validate us, to help us have big feelings, you know, using women, using feminine energy in all the ways that we do. Again, we're disoriented in some meaningful way. And then that's not for me to put on another man. It's just, I think what's useful in this is, you know, inviting listeners to just reflect on where might you be oriented around things that don't really matter to you, or just disoriented, like kind of lost, not really knowing where to go, what to do with your life.
And is the process for reorienting, like doing an audit of your time and energy or desires, or what's the...
Well, I love that word, reorienting. Yeah, that's the, in this domain, I think that's the magic word, getting reoriented. And that's a great question. I mean, I think there's all kinds of ways that a man can get reoriented, but I do think you're right that the very first step is to just take an inventory, to acknowledge. You got to acknowledge that, okay, yeah, you know what? I am doing this work that I don't give a shit about, really, you know, and I'm spending 40, 50, maybe 60 hours a week giving my life to something that I don't fucking care about. You know, or I may not even need in terms of just to survive, you know, financially, whatever the story is, whatever, you know, even things like pornography. Again, I think when we're disoriented, we will use things. Well, this actually brings me to the fourth, which is we numb out. You know, we numb out. And I think that's also a product of being disoriented is we, you know, when we're not lit up by... You know, another word in the oriented, disoriented realm is purpose, you know, living from deep purpose. And when we aren't clear about like, what am I for? You know, what is life really wanting me to express through me? What is life calling me into? And am I doing that or not? And when we don't know or we're not, well, that's when we reach for things that cause us to numb out. You know, and that can be video games, pornography, I mean, work, TV, fantasy football, even sex can be something that we use to actually numb out and not feel.
Mm. And so one of the steps would be to explore the intention underneath the behavior. Because I think for each of those examples, there are instances where it's a really wonderful thing to use.
Absolutely.
Fantasy football, if it's for A, B, and C to connect with your friends, express. But if it's not done intentionally, yes. Then is that where the problem arises? Man.
Totally. Even pornography. Pornography, when I think, and again, I'm not anti-porn. I've written articles about why men should stop using porn, but I'm not across the board. Everyone should just stop porn. We should eliminate it from the planet. No way. I mean, thoughtfully used, intentionally used like a tool for intimacy can enhance intimacy with a partner, can bring some new flavor or kink or fun to a dynamic, right? It can even solo be used as a way to enliven your body versus just numb out, you know, check out, numb out. Video games, the same. I'm a video gamer. I love video games, but I have to be careful, Jeremy. Because I will go down that rabbit hole and never come out.
Yeah.
I love video games, man. But I have to put limits on myself. Because at some point, it just becomes a way to zone out. It's not a way to just have fun. It's not a way, at some point, you know, it's not a way to, oh man, just, you know, decompress after a rough week, after an intense week, or just have some checkout time. No. At some point, it becomes my way of numbing out from my life, you know, of even being disoriented. Like, fuck it. I don't want to get oriented. I want to just check out and do this stupid game that 100 hours later is going to amount to absolutely nothing for my life.
Right. It's like empty calories from a dietary analogy. Oh,
that's great.
It's like, yeah. Where did this bag of potato chips just go? Why am I still hungry?
Exactly. Yeah.
It strikes me also that some of these examples of the isolation and the cynicism, video games or the distraction, like those things, as you describe them, I feel myself thinking, oh yeah, like there's a part of me that's like, man, that's easy. That's like, that's just like an easy way out or an easy off ramp, whereby the opposite of staying in your heart and being intentional reaching out for help, those things feel like they take a bit more effort and a bit more brain power or heart power.
Yeah.
It's like, does definitely. That make sense?
Absolutely. It takes more presence. It takes more, you know, I've got just over here, I've got the Meta Quest VR headset, the Quest 2 sitting over in the corner over there. And I haven't touched it for a couple weeks, but it whispers to me, Jeremy. It's saying, you don't need to do your work. You don't need to go spend time with your wife. She'll be fine. She'll just watch Love is Blind for a few hours, man. You know, you don't want to watch that shit. You want to come into this fantasy world and shoot bad guys and get lost in this incredible adventure that actually takes you nowhere and amounts to nothing. But never mind that. You know, so it's like you say, man, it is tempting. It is an off ramp. And look, I will at some point pick it up and spend a couple hours. Thank God the VR stuff still makes me nauseous after about an hour. So I have to stop. Right. Right? But yeah. it's that temptation is always present.
Yeah. This just dopamine infused like escape. Right.
Yep. It's easy. Easy out.
This is a big tangent, but like the VR technology now, which is mind blowing, is as bad as it's ever going to be.
Yeah.
I think about all these things that we've been discussing and say a decade down the line when you just have to put your contacts in or you touch your watch and suddenly you literally are in an entirely different universe. Constructed by geniuses to just infuse dopamine and distraction into your pores.
Dude, it's mind-blowing to consider. Yeah.
Not great. Hang on. Let's stop us from taking that off ramp.
Yep. Which we just did. Notice that. We just went.
Yeah. I'm going to put a little pressure on you. Do you remember the fifth cul-de-sac?
Yeah. The fifth dead end. Cul-de-sac's dead another end. Fourth. The okay. dead end. Yeah. Gotcha. It's powerlessness. Just men that are disconnected from their power. Mm. You know, and what that often can manifest itself as the guy who just plays the nice guy, you know, Mr. Nice Guy is a man who tends to be disconnected from his power, or the man who's just shut down. You know, it's like the electricity's been pulled out of him. I've worked with men that are in marriages like that, men that are solo that are like that. It's the same feeling of like, I just have no power. I have no influence over my world, the world, anybody. Mm. And again, I call these dead ends because there's nowhere to go. It's a dead end. You know, all of these cynicism, a powerlessness, being disoriented. What the hell else did I say? Numbing out and isolating. They're dead ends. Even when we may create success, it's like, if I feel powerless, I mean, some men will still have a lot of money, but if I feel powerless, that what difference does it make? None.
Yeah. It's not even like you could put a spin on it somehow of like, no, isolation is really good, man. Like cynicism, particularly helpful. You're just saying, yo, like we got to try to kick this habit.
Well, look, if you're a monk and you want to go isolate, cause that's a spiritual practice, you know, there's, you know, these days, the dark retreats, you know, where guys will go, and usually guys, I'm sure women do this too, but it seems like a pretty uniquely male, pursuit. Mm. But we'll go sit in a dark room for 7 days or 30 days, you know, it's like, how long can I go isolated? It's almost like you're looking for something inside of that. That's not what I'm talking about here though. Right. Mm. That's kind of like I was saying, like using porn for enhanced intimacy. I think you can use isolation for connection to yourself, for self-discovery, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the default patterns of isolation that are a consequence of our stories around how individual we must be. You know, how I can't trust other, no one else is going to have my back. You know, I'm the one that has to save the day here, save my own day, save myself, because no one else is going to show up for me. All those things, right? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And just confronting the fictions that we are living as truths in some way, the stories that we're telling ourselves. Yeah. And I'm thinking about that powerlessness, that fifth dead end mm-hmm. of, It has nothing to do with physical strength, et cetera, or even at a large scale, but it could be as simple as, what do you want to eat? It's like, I don't know. What do you want to eat? It's like, oh, no,
sure. Yeah.
What do you want to eat? Like, you have to have some, like, speak up for yourself, stand up for yourself. What do you desire?
Definitely. Yep. The way I often describe it is like, particularly in relationships, like when a woman can put her hand, you know, energetically, like she can put her hand right through you. I'm speaking to men now, right through you, because you have no backbone. You have no boundaries. You don't know how to say, no, I don't like this. This is not okay with me. It's like she can't feel you anywhere. You know, and again, we often may contort ourselves. It's a crazy thing. It's a fascinating thing, this whole powerlessness thing. I heard one of my mentors years ago, Mark Granger, said this, and he's not the first to say this, but he was the first to bring it to my awareness. He's like, men today, we don't know where to put our power. And we don't know where to put our power. You know, I think about that a lot. I love watching. You ever seen the Vikings show on the History Channel version of Vikings? Oh, my God, man. It's so good. Easily top three shows of my life.
Vikings?
Just Vikings.
Okay.
Ask any guy that's watched Vikings, he is going to tell you how much, like Ragnar Lothbrok. Remember that name?
Is he like, does it make you want to be a Viking, or is it inspiring?
Absolutely. Well, what I love about that show is it's talk about power. Is it that's a show, like when you watch it, they play with all the archetypes, like all the masculine archetypes, from the warrior to the lover, you know, king, magician, all the archetypes. You see the shadows of those archetypes, the way they're expressed. I mean, it's just an incredible display of like what men, what people, because women too are expressed in all these really profound and strong ways in that show. You just see like, this is what humanity is capable of in this is what I'm capable of in my expression. Right. And yeah. And one of them is that warrior archetype. Obviously Vikings are the first thing anyone's going to think about probably is the warrior archetype. Mm. Right. And I think a lot of us men, I will say that probably attracted to my work are a lot of men that are very disconnected from the warrior archetype, you know, and that's painful. It's painful. That's powerlessness.
How does that manifest when you say there's a man that's disconnected from a warrior archetype? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, if you think of the warrior is the one who has a sword. You know, he can pick up a sword. He can, you know, point it outwards to keep chaos at bay. You know, he protects his boundaries with his sword, with his weapon. And what that can look like, again, just in an intimate relationship, is a man who can just say, you know what? I don't like the way you just spoke to me. That doesn't work for me. Please don't be disrespectful in your language with me. Right? Just that. Mm. You know, notice I'm not cutting off, you know, my wife's head. I'm not attacking her with my sword. I'm just like, and look, all metaphors, you know, they have their limits. Especially mine. I always run into my limits with my own metaphors. Like, okay, past this metaphor really breaks down.
Yeah. But it's a weird... I'm not burning my wife at the stake, you know?
I'm not actually pointing a sword at her, but
right.
I am putting, I'm letting her know like too far, you know, that you can't come past this because this is my boundary. Right. And by the way, I'm also capable of honoring her boundary. Right. But that's one example, a man that's disconnected from that warrior archetype. He doesn't know how to say no. He doesn't know how to, you said it earlier, just really speak up for and reveal what's really going on for him.
It's interesting that you use that example because I literally live that. When I first started dating Kendra, we were living together, I think, at that point. There was like a scene in the kitchen, and I remember I was at the pot and I was cooking something. She said something, and we laugh about it now, and I've talked about this publicly before, but I turned to her and basically said, no, like, we do not speak to each other like that in this relationship. Mm. And then there was like an awkward pause, to like let that land. And then that was it. And it was done. But I look back at that that was like a pivotal moment in our dynamic where we were like, we're not going that way. Like, we're going this way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just in that momentary example where it would have been so easy to just bite my tongue and continue stirring the pot, which is perhaps an interesting metaphor anyway for stirring the pot.
That's exactly right, man. And so many men didn't step up in that moment, or they didn't know how to do it skillfully anyway. Yeah. You know, so either they said nothing or they overreached and then became the aggressor themselves. You know, it's like they took the sword and actually did cut her head off, just metaphorically in that moment. And now it's just war.
Right. And then you're into a pattern of
now you're of in a pattern.
Like, geez, you would probably see that a lot in couples of there's just a dynamic of attack, defend, attack, defend.
Yep. But Terry Real, he calls it a stance, dance. Like, you each take your stance that you commonly take, and now you dance. You know, and like you said, one might be I tend to have been with very fiery women throughout my life. Like, something in me, it's like on some level, Jeremy, I recognized some subconscious level, like, I need women that can kill me. Metaphorically,
I feel like you and I would be good friends.
Tell me more. Why?
My partner is very fiery. Like, I've described her as a nuclear factory. Like, there's an intensity in her that I could see Sylvie, your partner, having as well. And there's like a calm sort of like the dude energy in me where I'm like, I know that I need to be with someone like you, but there's also part of me that like really doesn't love that I know that. Like it'd be so much easier to just find some like gentle, mellow swan lady, cat lady.
Submissive pushover, some kind of, you know, just go along with my flow, not the flow, go along with my flow, not the flow.
So I interrupted you. What have you learned from dating or being with fiery partners?
Well, man, gosh, I guess so damn many things. I mean, my work, even, you know, the book that I wrote, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, that actually was born of a reflection on a 5-year relationship with an incredibly fiery South American woman from Chile, actually, who, man, we just spent 5 years repeatedly destroying each other in all kinds of ways. And I talk about, again, boundaries. You know, I didn't have boundaries. I didn't even know men needed boundaries other than nothing. It just wasn't even something that I had ever conceived of. Like, I get women need boundaries. Which really consisted of don't hit them in my early thinking of boundaries. Just don't hit them. You know, and I really don't want to be called names, and I'm not going to call her names. But even that I didn't really conceive of as a non-negotiable boundary. It was just something I knew I didn't like. Well, boy, did she call me names. And our relationship even got physically, mutually so. We abused each other because we didn't know how to have fucking boundaries. You know, it's like I became someone that I didn't like, I didn't respect. And at the time I blamed her. It's her fault because she shows up in all these ways. You know, she says all these things that are so hurtful. Mean, cruel. I mean, she could play with my emotions. I felt, you know, the metaphor I would tell is I was like a rag doll in her bulldog mouth. You know, she would just fucking shake me, man. Her slobber flying everywhere while my limbs are just flapping in her mouth. You know, holes in my raggedy and clothes, my raggedy doll clothes. You know, just an eyeball. You know, drooping out of the socket, you know. Well, how did we get there? How did that metaphor really come online? Because I did not know how to tell her that this is not okay. You know, speaking to me like that is not okay. And I would fight with her forever. You know, how dare you call me disgusting? I'm not fucking disgusting. You're disgusting. You know, shit like that. You know, just I'm in the argument rather than just be like, look, I get that you're upset, but you can't talk to me that way. I'm not going to have a conversation with you if in this way. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to continue further to have a conversation with you if this is how we're going to do it. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't even know you could do that. I mean, so that's, you know, just one example. And I need a shutdown, submissive, nice girl woman wouldn't have stood up to me like that, wouldn't have given me the opportunity to realize I need boundaries.
I wrote this thing a while back about how when I first started dating Kendra, it felt boring to me.
And how long y'all been together now?
We just had our 5-year anniversary in October. When we were dating, I wanted to break up with her because I was bored. And I couldn't figure out a reason to break up with her. I went through the audit and I was like, check, 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 check. And then later I just stayed with it. Like the scientist in me was like, I'm going to stick around. Like I need to explore what's going on here. I need more data. And what I realized was that the healthy relationship didn't feel healthy. It felt boring to me because I'd never been in a healthy dynamic. And to your point, I was used to like the eggshell walking and the passive aggressive games and the makeup sex and the intensity and the roller coaster. And it was like, my system like craved that. So it took a while to lean into the healthy normality.
Man, I remember a woman before I met Sylvie, a woman I was not dating this woman, but we were, I was trading coaching for Reiki. She was giving me Reiki. And she, anyway, she was in a 5-year relationship with someone at that time. And we were just talking about, after this session, we were just talking about relationships and, cause I was already writing about relationships at the time, blogging about it. This is probably a good 10 years ago now. And I remember kind of asking her, like, you're with a guy for 5 years. Like, I mean, like, what do you just do every day with each other? Like, aren't you bored? Like, do you just, I mean, I remember, and I think I said to her, I said, look, I think I'm afraid of boring, of relationships as being boring. Like, what do you just read the newspaper together every day, go for walks? Like, what the fuck do you do with somebody over time? And she just said, you know what, Brian, what's wrong with boring? And I thought, oh, that's good. That is so good. Yeah, what's wrong with that? Like, actually, I thought about it, like, actually, you know what? Nothing. It's actually kind of nice. It can actually be really nice to, yeah, just sit and read the paper together, go for a walk in, you know, outside in the woods and just not have a lot of that crazy excitement that I was afraid I might be addicted to myself.
Totally. It's the best, just like riding in a car with someone and it's just quiet. And like, there's no need to just talk all the time. It's just the stillness. It's like, yeah. One way I've framed it is that boredom equals presence. And so that I think in our society today, it's so easy to not be bored. It's so easy to be distracted, stimulated, etc. But this idea of like boredom, like I think we should be bored more often. I think you know, it's a gateway to presence. I love that. But you brought up your book. I feel like we should dive into that a little bit. Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. Reminds me, I was riding in the car with my buddy Brandon Alexander years ago, and he was talking about...
I know Brandon. He lives dancer.
Yeah.
Turned sexy, cowboy. Sexy dancer guy. Okay, did he? I haven't talked to him in years, but I know Brandon.
Now he's like... Yeah, he liked dance for big stages. Now he's like a cowboy. He's the best. Yeah.
Okay.
But we were going for a hike and he was telling me about somebody that he was dating and he realized, you know, she's not my person. I need to break up with her, but there's part of me that like wants to continue being intimate with her. And he said, but then I realized I'm sleeping with another man's wife, meaning she's not my person. She's not going to be my wife. So she's somebody else's. And I just love that dynamic of, like, then that's the parentheses or leave her part of your book title for me. It's like, if you want to love her every day, like she's not your person, then like you got to go. But I'm getting ahead of it. So
I love his clarity first off.
Right.
His clarity that's not his wife, his woman. That I think for a lot of men, I certainly for me, I in years past, you know, it's interesting. I would say I struggle with that clarity, but the reality of it is I always fucking knew. I always knew, man. And I think that Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, that the I told you I stayed in that relationship for 5 years. I stayed in it for 5 years because on some deep level, I knew this wasn't for me. I knew she wasn't really the woman I wanted to build a life with, but all of my, you know, brain stories and just stuff, my cynicism, my fears of being alone and isolated, my feelings of powerlessness, like all those dead ends, you know, were in some ways at play such that I couldn't act on that clarity with integrity.
Right. Yeah. I had a similar dynamic of like trying to get the square peg in the round hole or have it be like 95% right and so close and having this fantasy of what it could be and refusing to quit because I saw quitting as a bad thing and all the rest of it.
But
so you've written this book, Choose Her Every Day.
Yep.
Talking about a series of failed relationships. You have this great line that you vowed to stop sucking at love, which I thought was very honest and simple.
I mean, it really is that simple. I just don't want to suck at love. I sucked at it for decades and, you know, when I was writing this book, I wrote this. So I started, I've been doing this work for 10, 12 years now. And I know I keep cutting you off if you're getting at a question.
No, you're good.
Yeah. But this book is really a collection of, you know, all of the, like, my teaching stories and insights and practices and all of the, you know, even that I work with my clients, that I practice with my own wife, and that I was learning along the way. Some of the things I was just waking up to and learning along the way, and other things I'm looking back and going, oh man, if only I knew that, you know, 10 years ago. You know, I think one of the things that I love hearing from so many men, even my own therapist, he's in his 70s, an older man in his 70s. I remember he said, man, I really wish I'd had this book in my 20s, you know, and Jeremy, I wish I could have written this book in my 20s. You know, I could have used this in my 20s as well. I'm almost 50 now. How old are you?
I am 43.
43. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good age, man.
Thanks, thanks, bro. But yes. I like just the idea of the book, or the premise, simply that love is a skill that you can get better at.
Yeah.
That relationships are a skill. I think, you know, I've interacted with so many clients and friends and even myself back in the day, just this cursed idea that I was not good at this. It was not going to happen for me. Yeah. This sort of cynical surrender to the possibility of ever getting what I saw on the internet. It seems like you're like, no, man, just read this book. Here's what you can learn. Here's some stuff you can do. I got you.
Yes. It is a skill. It is learnable. It is learnable with practice. You know, I remember one of the teachers I studied over many of my years, this woman, Diane Connolly. She actually studied with her. She just ran a healing arts school here in Maryland. And she was, her specialty was in acupuncture and Chinese five elements theory. Anyway, that probably doesn't all matter. But I remember she would use this one language trick where she would say, look, it's not that I'm bad at something. I'm not bad at computers. I'm just not practiced at computers. I can get better at anything if I practice. And I love that reframe that she gifted me so many years ago, because same, like, I'm not bad at relationships. I'm not just practiced at good communication, at skillful communication. I'm not practiced at being present. You know, we can practice presence. We can practice skillful communication. Obviously, there's things we need to learn about what that looks like, but then we can practice it. You know, like you and I have been talking about what it could sound like to just have a moment with our partner when she maybe crosses a line in terms of her, the way she's speaking to us or criticizing or whatever it is. That's a skill. That's that right there. You know, we're not going to do that. Let's not, I'm not going to communicate with you in this way, and it's not okay that you do it with me, for example, right? That's a skill. Now we can start practicing and get just, we really can learn to do relationship well through insight. You know, my formula, it's not, I didn't invent this. I don't know, but where this came from, but you know, insight plus action equals transformation. Insight plus action equals transformation. I mean, insight without action is like, you know, having a treasure map, but never going to look for the gold, right? Where, you know, action without insight is kind of like just, you know, throwing your boat on the ocean, having no idea where you're going. And all you're doing is just, you know, paddling against the current, fighting the winds. You're taking lots of action, exerting a lot of effort, but where the fuck are you going?
We just start digging random holes. I'm looking for treasure.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're just digging holes.
Right. Just throw out the map. I don't need a map. Forget the map. There's treasure on this continent somewhere. I'm going to find it. Yeah. Just start digging holes.
Yeah, intuitively, I know this is the spot. You're like, might want to try a map.
Intuitively. Right. If I just keep digging, I'll find treasure eventually. Yeah, but you might need many, many, many lifetimes.
Yeah. And like, I often will joke that I'm a lazy person. So like, why not try to use the map? Like, why not try to listen to somebody that's done this before? Mm-hmm. And to your point, I think the marketing gurus of yoga and meditation have done really well by calling it a practice, like a yoga practice. mm-hmm. a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think once you do start trying to have different kinds of conversation or to speak up for yourself, it's going to feel like a beginner, like a baby giraffe vibes. Like you might not be super fluent and you might feel yes. scared and it might be a little yeah. clumsily done, but the more reps that you can put in, like anything, the more your skills will be honed, the better you'll get at it. It eventually becomes pretty second nature.
Yep.
Like I look at those guys serving tennis balls. I've never really played tennis, but like mm-hmm. tennis serves look so hard, man. And they just yeah. like smash them each time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the metaphor for boundaries and yes. love and all the rest of it.
Smash tennis balls. I like it. Yeah. I call it in lieu of a skill or some practice or, you know, either insight or, you know, skillful action, the I call that method, the winging it method. We're just winging it. Just winging it. You know, just, we just doing what either we saw our parents do, or we are doing something in reaction to what we saw our parents do. You know, just, and the outcomes are typically disappointing with the wing it method, I find.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you hear the survivorship bias of the one person that winged it and found the treasure chest on the first dig of the first hole. And then yeah. they've got a, you know, a million Instagram followers and like, for $10,000, I'll show you the wing it method. Right. Don't worry, I got you.
You know, my friend, do you know Kyle Cease?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He and I were roommates for a time.
You know, way back in the day?
I wouldn't have been married at that time. So yeah, about probably 10 years ago.
He's great, man. I've got a couple of stories about him. He's wonderful.
Yeah. So Kyle, I love the way he put it. He's like, a lot of teachers and people doing this are like, look, I'm going to teach you how to write a hit song. All you have to do is write Billie Jean. Just write Billie Jean and you have a hit song.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're not really teaching me anything. And I can't really do that because that's like, what are you talking about? Just do mm-hmm. Billie Jean.
Yeah.
He's a transformational comedian for those that are unfamiliar yeah. with him, and he's brilliant.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast too, if you're listening a couple of years ago, I had him on. He's the best, man. I met him randomly in a cafe where I grew up. Mm. And I just had read his book and I was like, oh my God, that's fucking Kyle Cease. Like, I need to go say hi to that guy.
Is it Evolving Out Loud?
Yeah. So I went and said hi and he gifted me two tickets to his events. In Glendale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I went, and then I signed up to do a program with him. And then like, we had some text messages. Anyway, back on track, Brian Reeves. Anything else to say about the book? Did we cover it?
Well, I want people to know it's not just for men, it's for women too. It's a book, you know, the title can sometimes be misleading, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, but it's actually for women too. It's for for women who are interested in understanding more about the challenges that men go through and what we're confronted with in relationships, how to communicate better in relationships, but also to be validated. You know, a lot of what I'm writing about here is like is from the eyes of a man who's waking up to all that I was ignorant to. In my 20s and 30s, that all the ways that I was contributing to relationship breakdown that I had no awareness of. And I think a lot of women find that really useful, especially coming from a man. So I just wanted to say that as well.
Yeah. Do you find that dating being married to a feisty therapist continues to shine some light on your blind spots or continue to elevate you? Like, what's
definitely
that like?
I think Sylvie and I have a really good balance of, you know, you get a relationship coach and a relationship therapist together, and you can imagine that there's a potential for that to be really awful, really excruciating, endlessly, like one just ongoing workshop. And
do you have moments where you just have to like time out. Like, we're now.
Well, that's what I mean. We have a good balance because we're pretty good about not doing that. You know, we're pretty good about just being people together. But, or I should say, and, you know, we both understand how to stand up, have boundaries, say no, this isn't working for me, etc. And yeah, man, look, like we're talking earlier, like the temptation to take those off ramps into Easy Town are always there. You know, some of my challenges, like it's I didn't really learn how to be nurturing. You know, I grew up in a family where nurture wasn't really a thing anyone did. Kind of every man for himself. And so I didn't really, that blueprint didn't really get activated in me. And I'm with a woman who's incredibly nurturing. And of course, she wants to feel nurturing from me. That's really challenging for me sometimes. So, and you know, I feel that every day, that limitation that I have, knowing what it is that she would really like to experience from me and feeling the absence of that, or the limitation or the struggle with that in my own body, which often occurs like an irritation. I don't want to fucking be nurturing, you know, is what my body will scream. Leave me alone. Cause that's what I know from my youth, right? I just know being left alone.
And to attempt to be nurturing as a beginner, quote unquote, in the presence of somebody that's so good at it, I think is another dimension. Because I feel the same with Kendra. Like she's like a living, breathing heart sometimes. And I'm like trying to open up. And I'm like, God, you're like a genius at this. And I just feel like this, this white belt being like, Jeremy cry. Yeah. Like, but the idea again that like nurturing is a skill, like all of this is a skill that you can put some intention and practice into.
It is. And it's a skill. And there are things in the way of me learning that skill. Like there's a lot of grief. You know, one of the things that comes up for me, we're talking about this particular thing. I think all men, it would serve us to learn to be a somewhat nurturing, by which I just mean be able to, you know, when your partner's looking at you with sad eyes, just be able to go like, I know, baby. It's okay. Like just that, you know, and which can also, again, be difficult for me because nobody ever fucking gave that to me, Jeremy, growing up. I don't have any memory of anyone being with me and just saying, it's okay that you feel that way. Right. So there's also, you know, when I feel my wife wanting that for me and I feel my limit, you know, like pushing at my edge to offer it, what also I know is underneath is a lot of anger, even rage, you know, the rage of, you know, how could you fuckers leave me alone in this world? You know, it's not about Sylvie at all. It's about what I experienced as a kid. How could you, you know, oh my God. So, you know, you asked about, you know, at relationship coach, relationship therapist together. And that stuff's always present. It's always coming up. We've been at this for 8 years and new things are always arising. You know, in our awareness, we're learning so much about ourselves, about each other. And, you know, one of the things, Jeremy, I often tell couples when I work with couples, I say, expect it to take 10 years to get really good at being with each other. Not because I necessarily think it will take 10 years, but it will take a long time to get good at being with each other. And this is after you start trying to be really good. You know, you stop using the wing it method and you actually start learning some skills and learning some practices and getting into the, you know, the shadow stuff and all the things in the way, like, you know, that's so, and one thing I'm often looking for too, is if you hear that and you're like, okay, so you're saying there's a chance, that's a good sign. Like that's a good sign. But if they hear that and they're like, I have to spend 10 years with this bozo. I'm not in. That's also something to be paid attention to.
Yeah. Just going back a moment to what you said about growing up, like if you didn't get nurturing in the face of tears or being upset, like what did you get, just out of curiosity?
Well, I was just left alone. I mean, it's an interesting word, but neglect in a way. You know, I had all my material needs. I had, you know, great parents, but, you know, my, There was alcoholism in my home. There was, you know, it's like the adults in my home were just so busy trying to survive and just try to keep the world together that, you know, when I'm being bullied at school, they're not even aware of it. I wouldn't even know to tell them. You know, I'm just carrying all this pain and this anguish and this fear in my body. And nobody's sitting down with me at the end of the day saying, Brian, how are you feeling? How was your, you know, or I lost a cousin to suicide. I think when my dad told me, he sat with me, he told me I was probably 10 and he told me in the car and I cried for a couple hours, but you know what? That's the last anyone ever talked about it. You know, it was a cousin I was really close to and nobody then ever came to me in the days or weeks after and said, how are you feeling, Brian? So, you know, and I'm a pretty shy kid. So it's not like I was just wearing this all on my sleeve for them to even see. So it's like nobody, you know, my parents were divorced at 4 years old. Same thing. Nobody ever really checked in with me. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's going on? It's okay to feel sad. It's okay. There was just radio silence. So, you know, I'm just, I don't know, man. I'm 4, 5, 6, just living my life, doing the best I can, frozen more and more and more frozen in my body. And nobody's either noticing or checking in or just that. So, you know, nothing.
Yeah. I think, you know, to your point earlier about being good at isolation, it's likely that, right? It's like, oh, this is just normal.
Familiar.
Yeah.
At some point, it becomes more comfortable. Isolation becomes comfortable. Like it's preferable to actually engaging with another human and having to be empathetic, having to be nurturing. Like, fuck that. Let me just go, give me my VR quest. Let me check out and, you know, that's so much. No one on VR is asking me to nurture them.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of my most confronting moments have just been simply sitting on a couch with Kendra looking at me lovingly and like waiting for my answer. And I'm just like squirming. Like, no, I'd rather be anywhere alone except for that.
I know that feeling, Jeremy, very well.
Yeah.
Probably feel it on most days at some point with Sylvia.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's it, man. And I relate to that too. There's like, personally, there's a sense of pride that I've arrived at a place where I continue to show up and I continue to choose a person that holds my feet and my heart to the fire and demands the fullness of who I am and the best that I can be, because I would likely not do it for myself.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. We'd be homies on the VR game, man. I'd be like, yo, go yeah, kill we some would. Zombies or whatever.
We'd be walking some, you know, Sylvie told me about the, you lead those tours in Spain, the pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we, you know, side note, we would love to do that with you someday.
Yeah.
But you know, that I'd be out on some adventure just again, by myself out, you know, having out in what I call the hills, you know, I love running for the hills. I actually had that experience in Ireland a couple of years into my relationship with Sylvie. I would take her or go myself to Ireland, you know, almost every year. And I remember I went 1 year, a couple of years after we were together, I was like, oh, I couldn't wait to just be on my own. And I stayed at this beautiful cabin in Western Ireland, about an hour from Galway, right by the ocean in a place called the Burren, which is a very barren landscape. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful, but it's very stark. It's very moon-like, mountainous, and all the hills are covered in limestone and there's not a lot of trees and it's gorgeous. Anyway, I remember one day I went for a hike, you know, I'm in Ireland, Sylvie's in LA. And there's that part of me is like, oh, it's so nice to be by myself, by alone. And I remember I'm walking out in the hills and I'm like, okay, well, here I am. All by myself, you know, just sort of like looking around going, well, what now? Why am I here again? What did I do this for?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is one of those sobering moments of just like, yeah, I can run for the hills, but there's not a lot of life in those hills. It's a nice moment of respite, but I don't want to live there. You know, I want to be with this woman that sometimes is really hard for me to be with, not because it's her fault, but because of all the shit that it just being with someone brings up in me.
Yeah. Like, what a beautiful realization too.
Yeah.
Even as I was reading your bio, you had such an interesting and diverse life, but you had one part of your bio on your website talking about how you like left the military and then went walkabout, I think was your phrase. And
yeah,
then
you
went and had adventures and I had a very similar backstory as well. And so I was like reading through it. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy, this guy tried to run away from himself too. And like figured out that he can't. All right, man. Well, any final thoughts, words of wisdom, anything we haven't hit that you're like, bro, how come you didn't ask me about this? What's your deal?
No, I think just, you know, the thing that I guess two things I'd love to just leave with listeners and is, you know, for men particularly is, you don't have to do this alone. You know, you not only do you not have to do this, and I mean this, but this, I mean, life, relationship, you don't, not only do you not have to do it alone, you're not supposed to. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help, ask for support, reach out. I think isolation is one of, like, for a lot of guys, it's kind of, that's a first place we can start to overcome these other dead ends, is just start reaching out, create connections with people. And I mean, even guys that are in relationships, I've worked with a lot of couples where, you know, the heterosexual couples where the wife's, one of her complaints is he has no friends. Like, I'm all he's got. He works and he comes home to me, and I can't bear all of the burden that he's bringing here. Even if he's not saying anything, just his heaviness, is a burden in that dynamic. So I don't know, like, you know, Jeremy, as I said, like I you know, you and I are really just getting to know each other, but I know that you are connected to some really, you know, good men, really thoughtful, rich men. I don't mean financially rich. I just mean, you know, characterally. Anyway.
Yeah. They're characters. Yeah. And so I'm in a men's group with a bunch of incredible dudes. And it's been tremendously, I mean, 2 points to that. One would be, Kendra will often say to me, look, like, call your guys. Like, I can't be your person for this. Like, this is not you and I problem. Like, go sort it out with your group.
Yeah.
And that's like what it has been. You know, historically, there were tribes and groups of people, and you'd go out and you'd rely on each other. And I think the second thing I would add is I was in this men's group with these guys for months before I realized how much I needed it. And like the way I described it was, I didn't realize I was sick until I got the medicine that I needed, that I didn't trust men, that I really didn't have any genuine deep connections with men that inspire me and that I respect. So yeah, I echo everything that you just stated there. It's like one of the most important things for men, especially.
Yeah.
And like to Kendra's point too, like she's got her group of powerful women, many of whom are the partner of my friends. And I'm like, yo, go talk to your sisterhood, go consult the witches and the oracles and get it out, move the energy, and then come back with some perspectives and grounding. I'm sure you and Sylvia have had similar
dialogues. Absolutely, man. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I guess just the last thing that I want to leave with listeners is there's this myth that relationships should just be easy. That's what the wing it method would have us believe. Well, I just do what I do and this should work. And no, disabuse yourself of that idea. Relationships are challenging. They're messy. I mean, they're challenging until they're not. It's like, again, until we're practiced, right? It's skillful communication, at being powerfully present, at learning how to create connection. You know, we learn these skills. Relationship does take on a whole new dimension of, I won't say easy, but I will say ease-filledness.
Yeah.
You know, my relationship with Sylvie is filled with ease, even though it sometimes isn't easy.
Right.
That distinction makes sense.
Yeah. The other sort of illusion is that once you learn this stuff, there's just no conflict.
Oh, like, yeah. Right.
Like there's no judgment. Like,
right.
Just,
right. Yeah. We're always going to want to have sex with each other at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And totally. We're always going to want to do the same things. We're always going to see things the same way. Nope. 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 Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. You have the same values, the same ways of communicating all the time, you know, right. Never disagree about anything.
That's right. Nope.
It's just a fairyland.
Nope. In fact, really learning to do relationship well means learning how to navigate all of the conflicts that are still to come. Well, doesn't mean getting rid of them. It means learning how to navigate them skillfully.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a whole separate podcast. Eh?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Brian Reeves, I know you've got an Instagram, a website, a couple books.
Yeah.
Anywhere else people can find you?
I mean, my website is really, you know, one-stop shopping for all the socials and blogs and my podcast itself, Men This Way, and my links to buy my book. It's Brian Reeves, Brian with a Y. That's key. I don't have Brian with an I. That's not my website. That's something else. Brian with a Y, Reeves.com.
Okay. And if you're listening, I'll make this even easier and put a link in the show note. Just have to click it. Brian Reeves with a Y. Thanks for coming by, man. It's been years in the making. Super stoked we got to connect and just really appreciate all you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeremy. I really appreciate you having me on, man.
Okay. That was Brian Reeves. And as usual, as always, I have put links in the show notes for you to click and explore more of his work. You can check out his Instagram, his website, the books, the podcast, get in his world, devour his content, learn all the things. That's it for me. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your support. Please do share it, 5-star review it, spread the word, help make kindness cool and compassion commonplace. Let's make the world a little better than yesterday. And if you hadn't heard today, you are amazing. And you're doing good. And you're doing okay. You've got a bright future ahead of yourself. That's it from me. I'm Jeremy. You can find me everywhere online at Long Distance Love Bombs, life coach, podcast hoach, podcast hoach. It's like a podcast cockroach. Anyway, I'm obviously tired. So I will leave it there. Thank you and good night.